The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's the cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa. I'm here with my co-host, Katie Gorman. How are you doing, Katie?
Good morning, Terry. I'm doing great.
Good. We are Jefferson State of Mind. We're broadcasting live from downtown Reading. KCNR, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better. It's your talk radio. We're streaming live on KCNR1460.com, and we archive forever and ever. So if you want to go back and listen to this program, you can go back and listen to the archive, and I would recommend that. So this morning, we continue our soiree of political freedom, and we have a guest on, Dr. Dan Sloan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Great.
Happy to be here.
Great. He is running for District 2 in Shasta County. So, Dan, give us just a couple of minutes on your background. Who is Dan Sloan?
Okay. Well, I'm actually a native of Reading. Born here at Mercy Hospital and went directly from the hospital to the family home out in Happy Valley, Canyon Road and Happy Valley Road there. There's a church there now. It's a Jehovah Witness Kingdom Hall. Everybody knows where that's at. There was a little white house there, and my parents and grandparents bought it from County Supervisor Perez. And my father passed, my biological father, when I was one in an auto accident. Moved to the Bay Area. My mother remarried. And then I moved back to Reading, went to Enterprise, actually Nova High School, if you remember that.
I do.
Yeah. So Nova and then on to Enterprise High School, graduated there in 81, and then went to Shasta College, Simpson University, and a whole bunch of other educational pursuits of my own. I dropped out of university for a period in when I was 23, bought my first company, supply chain logistics and other things, and went on to real estate and boom and crane operator marketing and did a lot of business with the military and very big companies of Philip Morris, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, had offices in three different states, California, Nevada, and Oregon. Just did worldwide transportation logistics from there. Went on to do a lot of different and a lot of varieties of entrepreneurial endeavors. And then as I did that, I went back to education because I found that I lacked in certain areas. When you're out there in the street, you're doing business as an entrepreneur, you have to wear a lot of hats. And I learned very quickly that you didn't know business law, HR, accounting, finance, marketing, and there's just so much to know. So I started teaching at Shasta College, have taught at Simpson University, an adjunct at Pepperdine University Law School, taught at UCLA, and Georgetown University.
How long have you been teaching?
Gosh, it's been, I believe I taught my first course in 1997 or 98. So it's been quite a while. But as extensive as my entrepreneurial background is the same as my educational pursuits. As I did well in one, I did well in the other. And then back in 2009, 2011 period, went through a rocky divorce. And my life changed dramatically, and I went to work in China and went to work with the Department of State, U.S. Department of State.
What was your capacity in that job?
It's a contract position, and I was as an academic, I could do stuff that was really interesting, traveled around all over China, Mongolia, Asia as a whole, doing work with business in ASEAN, which is the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. My last host position was with the U.S. Embassy there in Vientiane, Laos, right on the Mekong River. My office was at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and IFA, the Institute of Foreign Affairs, and my students were 150 Lao government officials, the senior staff of Lao government. So I know a lot about communism and socialism, and as bad as people think it is, it's worse. You know, it's horrible, and I bring that back. I've been here for 5 years now. So I came back to Reading and very quickly got back to Simpson University as a part-timer, and then they put me on full-time. Mm-hmm. I've improved the program there dramatically, the business program that they have, and started an MBA and a Master's of Organizational Leadership. Currently working on putting together a doctoral program, and I promoted from assistant professor to associate, and I'm the chair of the business department, director of the MBA, as well as the vice president of the faculty association and the chair of the faculty personnel committee.
What got you into politics? What was the deciding factor for you saying, you know, I need to get in the political arena? And before you answer that, I want to let people know that you can call in to 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567, if you have a question for Dr. Sloan. Anyway, sir, what got you into this? What was the motivating factor for you to get involved in politics?
You know, I've always been involved in some way. By the way, if you've been to my 273 in Kenyon Drive, that's my great grandma, Grandpa Kenyon. We've got really deep roots in the community, and I'm very proud of coming from humble beginnings. That's part of what got me into politics, is to see what I can do to improve the economic and other conditions in our community. I was involved with the Republican Party almost from high school on in some way. So for the last 40 years or more. And I actually wrote my first letter to a politician, Barry Goldwater, when I was in the second grade. And I've got hundreds of the letters from many different politicians over the years. So I've always been involved or interested in some way. I was involved in the Schwarzenegger campaign, trying to get Gray Davis out and all of the issues that were revolving around that. Met Maria Shriver and others. I've tried to keep involved politically because, as a business person, Wally Herger, just a whole slew of them. I served on a congressional committee in D.C., Business Advisory Council over the years, because I think it's important for our community to have people that are engaged and involved in the Republic and Democratic values. That's one of the things I can teach at Simpson University. The opportunity came up. I'd been here working 50, 60, 70 hours a week at Simpson, putting together the programs, putting them into a condition I thought would be successful, and it had been. So the first couple of years after returning to America, that's what I did, and teaching students about the fallacies and the problems with socialism and communism and how the capitalist system, free markets, are such a huge benefit. So coming back to Simpson also promoted an opportunity for me to get involved with our local Shasta County Republican Central Committee. And I'm the chairman of the Central Committee. Back in January, we had a chair who decided to step down. And I was given the opportunity, and they voted me in unanimously, which I was just blessed to have that opportunity. And God has been a guide in my life. And, you know, from Simpson and all the things that I do in my life, I just give so much of my, my success, if I want to call it that, to my belief in God and what I've done in my life. And it directed me into a calling, and that calling was leadership. So the MBA program I created is also in leadership. And I've been in positions of executive leadership my entire life. They called upon me to do it. I accepted the opportunity. And we took a committee that was fractured and broken and in disarray and have built.
Now, which committee are you talking about? The Republican Central Committee.
Republican Central Committee. And so from the beginning of the year, we went from maybe 10 to 15, 17 people or something like that who regularly attended that committee to now we've got a full slate of 24 people on that committee and almost as many alternates. So it's a packed committee.
Not to get off subject, but I did want to ask you a question about that. So when you do your Republican Central Committee meetings, is there a capacity to have, the regular folks come in and see those meetings? Because I know I know this new committee is so much more open to the folks than it was. It was almost like, you know, I mean, when Margie Domenici ran it, it was sort of like, you know, you it was just a little different. It wasn't quite as transparent. Are you guys are now bringing in, allowing the, maybe that's not the right word, you're welcoming the public to come in.
Republicans.
Yeah, Republicans. We are
Republican.
We are very welcoming. And that brings up some really challenging issues we just discussed in our last meeting last Thursday night. And it's because of we strategize. You know, we're the Republican Party. We're strategizing on how we could best benefit the community through recruiting and getting people elected. So we are open to the general public, but we have to make sure that when we have conversations that are of sensitive nature, that we're not having it recorded, that
right.
we don't have people there that are taking advantage
right.
of, and you know, that we don't want to be make a victim of ourselves by having people in there and doing stuff that's nefarious. So in addition to that, if we're in a school that's a public setting, in a public school. We just had a debate on Wednesday night, which was at the Sequoia Middle School, had everybody there. At Simpson University, we're a private Christian university, and we have to respect what they want done there in terms of keeping with the standards they have. So profanity and alcohol, and there's all kinds of stuff.
Let me ask you this, and then I want to get into what we're doing here locally. But I know what you're saying there really makes a lot of sense. I know that there's a lot of teaching that, some of us have been going around and doing to the California Republican assemblies. In fact, I just did one in San Mateo in San Francisco County. In fact, I was there when they were doing their endorsements. It's funny because you talk about recording and things like that. You know, if people record you, even if, let's say if somebody came in and recorded us in this private setting here, that's a felony in 632A because without permission, this is actually private. It's not something to where somebody can just, you know, it's just like our archives. You need permission to have those because it is private. It's not, it's out to the public, but it's not a public position. The question I did want to ask you, though, is getting into local politics, what is, in the jurisdiction you'd have as a supervisor, what would be the number one thing you think we need to do to where you believe you have a solution in some of the problems you have? What's the number one thing?
Number one thing, I'm torn between crime and homelessness.
You can relate them if you like.
Right, and they are related.
Go ahead.
You know, we have an issue with the first. Let me state that for transparency, I am the treasurer on the board of the mission, Good News Rescue Mission. So I am on the board, and so I have an insight into, and I've been there for years. Mm-hmm. So an insight into what's happening with that particular entity. And the related local issues with it. Homelessness brings with it a lot of crime, obviously drug addiction, abuse.
Yep.
There's just a myriad of problems that come along with it. And the people that are, you know, I don't want to hammer too hard on people that need help, but we as society need to have protections as well. And we're talking about retail business owners that have to protect their goods. I mean, even if you look at Walmart, what they're doing with all of the stuff that's in the store that's behind glass, having to be protected. You go down to Target or even Rite Aid or any of those because of the kinds of problems they're having just with retail theft. And apparently there's a law of $950 or less. In some communities, they're allowing people to get away with that to where they can go in and even in mobs, you know, take items off the shelf.
And you can't stop them. There's a new bill coming out that you can't stop them. So let's say that you own a convenience store and you have a clerk there that tries to stop somebody from stealing something.
Right.
That ends up being on you if you try to stop them.
I believe that was SB 553 or AB 5. I think it's an SB.
It's a new one.
Yeah.
Is it a Senate bill?
Well, it is. And what happened was in that particular bill at first, and this is what happens, like even with 969, the bill is written And then it dawns on them, oh, wait a minute, the public's got all this information we didn't have or ideas that we didn't have, so they have to keep revising it. So that bill, when it first came out, was the kind of bill that said, if your employees are not trained to security, then you
that's
can't
right.
have – and that's what's been in the radio and on news and everything, but they actually revised it.
They passed it?
And they passed it. But it was revised to get that part of it changed because it was unworkable. So now it's if you touch somebody, if you touch a retailer, like a shoplifter comes in and they say, okay, you need to stop and put the item back or put it down. You can't leave the store. If that person touches the retail clerk, they can actually be arrested and it's a felony. So it's actually put some teeth in it.
I haven't read that part. I'll have to go back and read that.
That's very interesting.
We have a caller on the line. Jerry, do you have a question for Dr. Sloan?
Actually, my name is Jerry. Dr. Sloan, I'm the current chairman for the California Rifle Pistol Association here in Chester County.
Great.
And before I have two questions that I want to ask. So first, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate the personal sacrifices that you take to run for office, you or anybody else. And I also appreciate your vast curriculum vitae. So it's just, I wanted to make those comments, and the world is shaping itself to be a very black and white world in a lot of different areas. And I just have two questions for you. The first one is, do you support hand counting votes or the use of voting machines? That would be the first question. The second question has two parts.
Can we answer the first? Can we answer the first one first, Jerry?
Yeah.
Okay, let him answer that. So is that just to clarify, is that, so you're asking him.
And this is Gary, correct?
Yes, Gary.
Yes.
Yeah, well, okay. we had it written Jerry, and we also, and now your new name is Sorry. Because you wrote on the bottom, we have a little sign here in the window, so your name is Jerry Sorry. Okay, so.
There you go.
So anyway, so are you looking for a yes or no answer? What are you looking for here?
I really am, because we have been voting, we've had hand counting voting forever in the country, 200 years. We've switched over to machine voting, and there seems to be a lot of discrepancies. There's a lot of mistrust.
So you're wanting to know what his stance is on that?
Yeah. It's
okay.
A yes or no question.
Okay. So, and I appreciate it, and thank you for the comments about how much work and effort it is to be in running and the vulnerability we take on in candidacy. So thank you for that. So your question was about hand counting. Is that right? Gary?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, to explain it as succinctly as I can, I believe the voters should have what they want, and if in terms of the local representation, what our community wants. So, if our local community wants machines, they should have machines. If they want hand count ballots, they should have those, or they should have a combination of the two, like a hybrid system that we have now. It's a paper ballot. We could hand count it, or you can run it through a scanner, or you can do both. You can hand count in order to confirm or to evaluate, to audit the count. So I'm all for what our local residents, because I believe in local representation, in bringing control and power back to the people. Sacramento should not have that authority. I've written about this extensively in AB 969. As the Republican chair and as an individual, I presented letters of opposition to 969, both to the Senate and to the Assembly. There were 44 letters that were sent. Two of them were from organizations. One of them was mine. So I'm very proud of the fact that when 969 was, and it's the same thing as we just spoke about with 553. When it was originally brought out, they never thought, and by they I mean the legislature, or the governor, never thought that anybody would just cancel a contract with Dominion. It never dawned on them. I mean, why would they think that? So suddenly they're caught off guard. They're flat-footed. And Kevin was, unfortunately, the target of that 90 votes between, what's happened with his, when he won the election. So it was an easy one to say, oh, we'll choose him, or we're going to vote him out or recall him. And it kind of snowballed from there. Kathy Darling Allen originally, and back in, I believe it was March or April, in the newspaper, if you look it up on the Record Searchlight, you'll see that she says, Patrick Jones invited me to a town hall meeting, and I told him I didn't want to come because that part of the law is already settled. Hand counting is already settled. It's been done for a while. But then a few months later, the overreaction was 969 and the Secretary of State working with our local ROV to create new rules, hand count rules. And those hand count rules, if you recall, We're going to require us to have 1,400 people. It's going to cost millions, or at least $1 million. I think there's 1.5 million.
Yeah. I thought it was in the billions.
Yeah.
It's not in the billions yet, Dan?
It was crazy.
It's only the millions.
So all of that came about, and then suddenly it dawned on them that, this is what I wrote in some of the letters, was that it won't be Shasta County that's going to disenfranchise, or at least the Board of Supervisors is disenfranchising the people. It'll be the Secretary of State and our ROV that are going to cost us millions of dollars, lots of time, all the restrictions that were put on it. So what did they do? They revised it, and they made it so that it stated specifically, Shasta County, you can't do it, and made it illegal.
And, to follow up on that question, when you said that you wrote those letters, and out of the something about 40 letters, was 44. Your 44 letters, are you saying that your letter was read?
It was read by the what happens is when it's going through the committees there, through Assembly or Senate, various committees have to go through it to determine whether it's
viable or not.
Right. And just various committees. But as it went through that, they would read and ask for additional comment. Actually, if you remember, there was a July 3rd hearing down there in Sacramento, which is crazy. It was on a holiday. You know, 4th of July holiday, and people couldn't come because they'd already made plans, and there was, in this whole idea of we've got to have an urgency event, when, in fact, like I said, the ROV's already stated that part of the law had already been settled, but then it was taken to another level to where it's going to cost $1 million or more, and then suddenly it's just illegal, period. You can't do it.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing is there's a thing called justiciability. You can look it up. It's justiciability. It's one paragraph. And what justiciability says is that the court does have jurisdiction over hearing and making a decision on a case if you can show there's been an adversarial position. Well, at this point, the state of California has been adversarial in changing their recall rules, their recall law, to make it where the governor really does appoint now, and they've been able to do that, and that's been because of what Shasta County did, and now they put in AB 969, and the Secretary of State is specifically stated that, hey, you know what, you don't have a grandfather clause here. We're saying, hey, it was legal when we did it, but there is no grandfather clause.
I want to get...
And so the thing is that what happens is with that is the fact that you now have a situation where everything's been adversarial. And I think that's the way that we take it down, is we can show that the court has jurisdiction because what's happened has been adversarial. Now, Jerry, you had one other question, and what was that, buddy?
So I don't think I got the first question answered. I really want to know...
What is it that you want to know, then?
I want to know not what your constituents want, but I want to know a yes or no. Do you favor hand counting or using a voting machine?
Yes or no question. Okay.
You're being elected to represent us, but I want to know what your feelings are, and would you support hand counting over voting machines?
I would support it, but like I said, as a representative of the people, if the people want to vote in machines, then that's what they should have. If they want a hybrid, which is what we currently have, that's okay with me as well. So I am in support of hand counting as long as I'm not going against the grain of the people I represent. I think that would be inappropriate.
But like in Kevin Price's situation, there's often times where you're going to go against the grain. As a politician, all politicians know that they're going to be going against the grain on some things. I just want to know what way you stand on it, hand counting or voting machine. It's a pretty simple yes or no.
Yeah, for me, it's a matter of give you a little more transparency of where I'm at. I actually did the logistics and supply chain management for the county many years ago and delivered the voting booths, ballots, and supplies out to all of the precincts for about 10 years. So I know what had happened there at that time. And there were issues with a bond issue, for example, and the voting machines would be delivered to the wrong place, and you know, we had all kinds of mishaps with machines and other stuff. Elections are always going to be this way, and what I want to do is ensure that the people get a system that's as free from fraud as possible. If hand counts are what they want, then that's what I want to do.
Okay, so we're going to have to leave it. Jerry, we're going to have to leave it there because we're going to a break, and we have another caller. Dolores, hang on. So we're going to a break. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
getting dark, too dark to see. I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, 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 knocking on heaven's door. Mama put my guns in the ground. I can't shoot them anymore.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273 in Anderson has teamed up with KCNR for Operation Holiday Salutes to thank our veterans and those currently serving in the military for their service. Memory Lane Antiques and Vintage features one-of-a-kind decorations, ornaments, wreaths, and garland, vintage glassware and table settings, paintings, jewelry, sports memorabilia, and collectibles along with toys and treasures in the Shasta Gateway Center on Highway 273. Open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6, Sunday, noon to 5, and Monday, 10 to 6.
At Stifel Nicolaus, I am committed to offering investors personalized investment guidance. Stifel has a full-service organization with departments staffed with professionals that specialize in a wide range of investment opportunities. We strive to give each account, regardless of size, careful individual attention. This is Susan Eastman, financial advisor, Stifel Nicolaus. Let's talk today about a personalized plan. Give me a call at 530-244-7199. Again, 530-244-7199.
Life never stops changing, but some things never change. So fill your plate and fill your drink, and fill this house with family, the kind of love that all these years can't wash away. Cause the older that I get, I see the life is short and bittersweet. Thank God for this Thanksgiving Day. Watching football, watching families grow, the old kids' table, all have kids of their own. Starting to see my grandfather in my nephew's eyes. Mom still can't talk about him and I'd almost cry. So fill your plate and fill your drink and fill this house with family. Kind of love a thousand miles can't wash away.
Irish.
Cause the older that I get, I see life short and bittersweet.
Sally Lou. Thank you for the music, honey.
I like that song.
Yeah, that's my Sally Lou. She puts all the songs on here. My Little Songbird always sings in the key of L. Okay, we're back, and we're really excited to be here with Dr. Sloan, as we are with all the candidates to come on, and an open invitation to all of them to come on and answer questions. So, Dolores, do you have a question for Dan?
I do. I have actually maybe two.
Okay.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Okay. My question is, and my concern that from what the research I've been doing on you, Dan.
Okay, hold on. Dolores, if you have a question.
I do.
No, let me land the plane. If you have a question, let me land the plane. It's a question, and I don't want any gotcha stuff from anybody, but I will take a question and he will answer it. Go ahead.
Right. Okay. I want to know, are you involved with Russia and China teaching second language to Russia? And do you have over 500 businesses? Are you involved with over 500 businesses? Those two questions are very important, especially China and Russia.
You know, I don't know what you're talking about on that, but I have an extensive background in China and with the Department of State and serving our country, which I am just absolutely 100% positive of our ability to be the greatest nation on earth. And even though we have a lot of problems with the president we have now, we can change that coming up soon.
But Russia, you do teach a second language to Russia. It shows on your profile. And I did do a research, and it does show you teach a second language to Russia.
I am a professor. That's what I do. I teach people. And at Pepperdine University, at the law school there, many of the students come from overseas. The Department of State contacts me on occasion and asks me to serve in a capacity as a professor.
Do you teach Russia a second language? That's the question. I would like a great answer.
Okay. I think Russia. He answered it.
Last year. I've been there for 10 years at Pepperdine University as an adjunct, and a lot of the students that I get are looking for areas of mediation, arbitration. And in February of last year through May, I taught for 5 months there, 4 or 5 months. The ambassador to Moscow was a Trump appointee. He knew of the work that I had done and contacted me. They were supposed to have 1,500 students from all the law schools throughout St. Petersburg and Moscow and throughout the entire country. There are scholars, judges, attorneys. And because of my expertise at various levels, I have 3 master's degrees and working on a 4th and a doctorate in financial economics. I have the ability to reach across a wide spectrum of fields of study. And because of that, my area of expertise in mediation, arbitration, and second language come together. One of my master's degrees from USC is in teaching, and it's specifically geared towards teaching English to speakers of other languages. It's those communication skills that the Department of State wants, along with my ability to be diplomatic and work with people. That's why they contacted me at the beginning of the war with Ukraine and said, hey, we would like for you to be online from your home in Redding, California, which I did. It went immediately from 1,500 students to 8,000. So I had 8,000 students online with me for 8 different sessions with the Department of State. I had, you can imagine what that's like, where you have one question from each person. You've got 8,000 questions. So I had an army of staff there at the U.S. Embassy in Estonia, as well in Moscow and Poland. Great honor for me to be able to do that for my country, for my nation. I'm absolutely not a communist. I probably have lived under communism and socialism more than most people that live in Reading. And I know the ills of communism, and I'm able to teach that. I'm just blessed to have that opportunity at Simpson University.
What about the 500 businesses you're involved in?
I have no idea what that
Dolores,
is.
Dolores, thank you for your question. It was a good question. I think he answered it, and we have another caller on the line. Patty, what say you? Patty, what say you? And can you turn your radio off? I can hear it in the background.
I'm going to walk away from someone else that has it on. Thank you so much, friends. So glad to be with you this morning. Are you ready to hear my question?
He is, I think. Are you ready to hear my question?
I'm ready.
He's all ears. He's got headphones on and everything.
Well, it was great to be with you all last night as a fundraiser, and I saw Dr. Dan talking with Gary. So good things were set up in advance. But these questions are so important because it so involves us. And I appreciate that you value education like so many of us do. And that's why we have purposely brought people to our area to educate us about what's truly going on with our election system and our vote. Because the two most important things, as Katie and Arthur and so many know, the number one thing we want to protect is the innocence of our children and to support the family in doing that. And the second one is knowing that our vote puts our leaders in place. And I'm thinking that maybe
hey,
we have
Patty,
the opportunity
Patty,
to listen.
Patty.
Yes. I'm getting to my question.
Okay.
Yes,
no, you're fine. You're not being rushed. I wasn't quite understanding your first question. Maybe Dan was, but education isn't in the purview at all or the jurisdiction of a supervisor. I just want to put that there. I mean, even though he's been an educator, so just can you clarify, just if you can clarify your question, that's all. Just so we get it, kiddo, and you're not being rushed here. Just clarify your question of what it is. Go ahead.
The statement is I'm glad that he values the importance of education, and that's what we value as well. And being educated on what's truly been going on with our election system is invaluable. Okay. It's just so important. It is.
Okay.
So here we are. We're in a place. We're at a fork in the road. We need to make a decision about whether it's machines, whether it's hand counting. So the great thing is we have an opportunity for you, Dan, to be able to meet Dr. Frank. He's coming back to Reading on December 15th. 16th and 17th, we're going to have another educational time because you have not got all the information that you need to be able to make a clear choice about what happens with machines and why it has been set up for the last 20, 30 years to fail the way it has. The mail-in ballots, when you started teaching, you said in 1997, 98, that's when mail-in ballots started doing what they're doing, and we have been hijacked. There's no
Patty,
question about
Patty,
it.
Patty, okay. I appreciate everything you're saying. What I'm doing is trying to get a question here. All right, go ahead.
Okay.
What's the question?
My question is, Doctor, what is your opinion on Ronna McDaniel? We do not need a Ronna McDaniel in our county. What's your opinion of her? Chairman of the Republican Committee.
You know, I have not met Ronna McDaniel personally, and all I can do is say that she was voted in by the Republican Party at the national level.
Yes.
Harmeet Dillon, I have met. I love Harmeet. You know, I just met with her again about a month and a half, 2 months ago at the Republican convention. I met with them again in March, I believe, of this year, March or April. Went down to the convention in Sacramento, and I actually had the honor of serving as an official for an election down there at the convention. And they did so because they were having some difficulty problems. Sean Steele, the previous chair of the California Republican Party, and I, we're perceived as people that could iron out some problems they have and make everything work, and it did. It worked out really well. But I love Harmeet. I love her politics and what she's doing. She was there at the convention we just had and was given some accolades by Donald Trump during his speech there, which I was also at. And I don't know much about Ronna, so...
You need to find out more about Ronna because we've all been betrayed.
Well, I don't know if that's in the jurisdiction of a supervisor anyway, but I think that I understand what you're saying. I mean, if you have questions for Dan, I'm sure he's accessible when it comes to anything you want to talk about as far as the Republican Party. But this
we'll coordinate through Carolyn.
Yeah, I think the platform was a really big issue, and one of a couple of things that they wanted to do was remove a life begins at conception and marriage is between a man and a woman. And we put our foot down, the delegates. I'm a delegate, and all the delegates that were there were outraged, at least the vast majority. I think it was over 80% voted. I wish it was 100%, but and over 80% of us voted no. We're not going to change our platform. You're not going to pull that out. So, you know, there are concerns, and I hear that. I hear that from you, and I hear that from everybody. I listen to a lot of people. I'm not like some people who say, I don't want to go on your show. I don't want to be in a coffee break with you or somewhere. I listen to almost everybody to get an idea of where they stand. That doesn't mean I agree with them. It just means I'm trying to get information in order to base my decisions on.
Okay, Patty.
If you are open to being educated, we'd be happy to meet together and have you meet Dr. Frank and appreciate all your information.
Yep.
It's been very revealing, Doctor. Thank you.
Okay. Lori, are you there? Lori, are you there?
Yeah. Hey, good morning, everyone.
Hi, Lori.
Hey, Lori.
Good morning. Hey, quick question. Is it
sure.
A yes or no or something like that, and I'll listen off air. Where is Dr. Sloan regarding the Second Amendment, because we've had the California Rifle Pistol Association at the meeting proclamations, and it's that shall not be infringed. If he could possibly address where he stands on that, and if there's time permitting, maybe on public health, inoculation, jab, boosters. That's pretty much my
okay. Well, just
great question.
Yeah,
Lori.
Great question. And so let's give him a shot to answer that. Go ahead, Doc.
Well, I love the Second Amendment and am an advocate absolutely for having our rights to have guns, to bear arms, and I have quite a few myself, and a large stash of ammunition and all that kind of stuff. So I obviously I'm not a person that's going to go against what I believe in. The ability for us to protect ourselves, to go hunting, go go out and protect ourselves when you're on a walk, even on the river trail or in the store. I believe that that's a great way for us to show that we have an adherence to the Constitution, and also to show that we have the right and ability to, as an individual, to protect ourselves. You know, if I were downtown L.A. or in San Francisco or somewhere where they're having a large problem with people stealing cars, you know, you stop at the light and they jump in your car or try to take it, they would have a difficult time with me. And I'm just saying, I would protect myself and let the law sort it out later.
Yep.
Because I have an obligation to the people that are with me and to myself to protect myself. The same thing with my home. You come into my home and you're going to have a problem because I'm going to protect it and protect my family.
Easier to repent than ask permission, huh, Doc?
You got it.
Okay, anyway, thank you, Lori, for the questions. We have another caller on the line, Casey. What say you, Casey? Casey, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
You could speak up a little bit. Yeah, go ahead. Speak up a little bit, please.
All right. Hello. Good to be with you guys this morning.
Okay. You have a question for...
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, for Dan.
Okay.
Yes, my question is, for me, the election fraud issue is a hill to die on because without fair and transparent elections, there's no America, and will continue to be ruled by selected leaders like Gavin Newsom. So my question is, do you believe 2020 was stolen, and do you believe in hand counting, even if it means being at odds with the state?
Okay. Well, we're in a condition right now to where we're less than a year away from having an election to where Donald Trump is running, and if it were held today, he would win by a landslide. And to me, I want to get him elected. I want, or at least the leader. Right now, I love Donald Trump's stance on a lot of issues. He's done stuff even when I was in China that were fantastic, and I believe reciprocity, meaning that if somebody does something, then you have the right to reciprocate. We aren't doing enough of that. Tariffs, trade, and all that stuff. And for what is happening right now in the political scene, we have a president, Biden, that I believe that most people are thinking this is a huge mistake. It was a huge mistake for him to be there. Nobody would argue that we don't want him there or he should not have been there. That's a big issue. Even the Democrats right now, I think he has a 40% approval rate by Democrats and for people that want him to run again for office. So I think even they are supporting the fact that we don't want him there. As a candidate, he will likely win the March election. If it were held today, like I said, he would definitely win. Then we've only got a few months later and he will be president if he is the winner of that primary. And after that, we've only got a couple months, and I guarantee you that one of the first things that will happen when he takes the presidency on January 20th, he's going to start changing how these issues are dealt with as much as he can with the authority that he has in executive orders. I guarantee you that's going to be changed. So for me, it's an issue of, you know, do I want to go back and try to change something and spend all of my resources, time, energy, and effort to try to fight something when I'm looking forward as the leader of a party politically here in Shasta County and in other areas to move the ball forward and to get us out of the condition that we're in? We didn't need to be put where we are, and I agree with the Democrats, the Republicans, independents. Joe Biden is not the answer, should have never been the answer, and should not have been there.
Okay, thank you, Casey. We have another caller on the line, and that is Stones. Go ahead, Stones.
Thank you.
You bet. Are you on there, Stones?
Oh, yeah, slight delay.
Okay, go ahead.
A two-part question, but they're related.
Okay.
Does Mr. Sloan, under his future oath of office, does he understand interposition and nullification against a criminal, other criminal governments? And the second part, this is related. Or does he believe in a judicial oligarchy where each elected official has to wait for a judge to tell us what to do? Thank you so much, folks.
That it?
That's it.
Okay. Go ahead, Doc.
those are pretty complicated questions, and I'm going to probably have to do some homework on those and get back to you into the details of the questions. So
I think he's talking about jurisdiction, interposition, and nullification.
Yeah.
That's where he's going with that. And I think he's trying to find out, you know, where you stand on understanding where your jurisdiction is and your present and what you're running for.
I understand those questions, but it's very vague, very broad. And I don't know if he was talking about China or if he's talking about local issues or where it's at, but a little more definition of what the question is directed at.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point because, see, the thing is, folks, this is Dr. Sloan has thrown his hat in the ring to run for supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
He's out there. I mean, it's something that isn't really a whole lot of fun, and it's something to where everybody that's thrown their hat in the ring, no matter who they are, for this position is willing to take questions and all that stuff. The relatability of what Dr. Sloan is running for is kind of what we had him in here for. We want to hear what he's going to do for the county because that's what he's running for. He's not running for Senate. He's not running for what he does in the Republican Central Committee is very well respected by people. And what he's doing in the community is very well respected, and his teaching is very well respected. But we'd like to kind of keep it, if we can, on the him running for supervisor of District 2. Now, there was the 500, the question of that Dolores had on the companies, and I think that if you want to
in my CV or resume and background, people might find that I have done business with Fortune 500 companies. That doesn't mean it's 500 companies that I'm part of. That's just a designation of that we use to say out of the Fortune magazine names 500 companies that are top companies in the United States. And many of those companies I've done business with, they're some of the largest companies, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, you know, Citibank. And that's what that refers to. In terms of jurisdiction, I understand there might be some questions as to whether what kind of jurisdiction we have in the county, what kind of authority we might have. And it comes up with issues like education or the economy. And even in homelessness, for example, there's that at-home program that they have where the city of Anderson, Redding, and Shasta Lake City, coupled with the county, are working together. Patrick and I have spoken extensively about this in using a multi-jurisdictional approach to say we don't want redundancies,
right,
and we want to be efficient. And being part of being efficient is not to silo ourselves off. And that's part of it. We don't want to have each one of them creating their own individual programs. And then when we can have synergy, we can use those efficiently. And even at Shasta College, there's a program out there for the people that have been released from prison. So they're on probation. And there's a new facility out there that they just built. Well, that's part of education. Because what we're doing is educating people in vocational training that could be about 48% of them is the stats I just reviewed. They repeat offend. Well, we don't want that. We don't want our citizens to become victims.
So that's within the jurisdiction of the Board of Supervisors?
With the probation department. Yeah,
exactly.
So, yeah, and so there's exactly. Areas to where we do have multi-jurisdictional or
absolutely
areas that we can improve upon, and even the HHS, we have issues there where we've got people that are on fentanyl, addiction, that are I looked at their website in their six-paragraph brief summary that they have. Education is mentioned 5 times because that's a big part of it, is to try to educate people on what they can do to get themselves out of that kind of lifestyle. In ways that we can improve as a community to get these people the help that they need.
Good points. So anyway, you know, the thing we have to be looking at here, too, is that to intertwine, that's great. That's great stuff. The other thing is that a lot of the problems we have and a lot of the situation we have in the county is the city of Redding controls so much. They have jurisdiction over so much.
Right.
However, under Article 11 of the California Constitution, we can, because we're a legal subsidy, as you know, the state being the county, we can go ahead and we can pass ordinances, soak in the city, And so maybe, like you're saying, there could be a combined ordinance where there's an agreement there to where we can really do something to help these businesses.
Like Centif, you know,
exactly.
and Met. You know, we've got a lot of programs
yes.
where the synergies in the involvement of multiple jurisdictions at either the state, county, or city level provide us an opportunity to use resources we wouldn't otherwise have. And that's a major benefit to us, and we shouldn't be just letting those go by. We should be using them. We're paying for them. Why
100%.
Not?
100%. Yeah.
So can we go back to talking about election stuff? Just because we were talking about people and being in office. So we're going to have this primary coming up. That's going to be in March. And then, you know, some of these races would go on to the 2024. And then my question is, when would our Board of Supervisors take office? And would that be at the exact same time as, you know, say, when Trump wins, you know, as a possibility?
January 2025.
Or if DeSantis, which
January
would be
2025. Preference. So let's say that Dr. Sloan wins his election. And also remember, if somebody gets 51%, no matter who that is, it's over. So, but taking office is the tricky part. So if any one of the candidates anywhere win that 51%, you know, they still can't take office till January. And that's not it. That's just is. However, I'm sure that most of the candidates would prefer that 51% and having everything over in March so they can get prepared on what they're going to do. But
I would sure love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody, you probably like to run unopposed, you know?
Yeah.
So. But anyway, we have about 4 minutes left, so I'd like you to tell people how they can get a hold of you, what your website is, how
Great.
They can, if they choose to, how they can help you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Doc.
Okay, so electdansloan.com is the website, and we'll soon have our Facebook up and running. We're getting as involved as we can with getting my story, getting my platform and the issues that I believe in out there. As I said earlier, I rarely turn down an opportunity to speak with people. I make myself transparent and available as much as possible. They can actually call me, and I'll give you my phone number. It's 530-605-7459. It's my cell phone. It's on silent mode right now, so don't call right now. But if you want to leave a message, you can do that. Love to speak with you and explain in detail what I think. And, you know, sometimes people think that I've been called everything under the sun, like everybody that runs for office. You know, ultra MAGA rhino. It's just all kinds of, you know, it's just on all sides of the spectrum. But if people don't know me, they may hear things about me that aren't true, or maybe they're suspicious. So if you think there's something that I can help explain, I'm very easy to speak with. So,
okay, Bruce, you have 30 seconds. No longer. You got about 20 seconds now. We've got to shut this down. Shoot away, Bruce.
Yes, just one quick question, yes or no. Would you have voted yes or no to get rid of the Dominion voting machines like the supervisors approved 3-2?
Thank you, Bruce.
Yes, but. So I think it was a good idea coming from my stance as the Shasta County Republican Central Committee. What I saw was a lot of people who felt disenfranchised and the turnout. I mean, you just look at what happened up in Shasta Lake City on this special election. The turnout was poor because people didn't trust, you know, the system in other issues. And that's what I was seeing back then. Dominion was a big issue back then, and it should have been removed. But I would have loved to have, in hindsight, a better explanation, which would have said we're going to go to hand count, or we're going to go to a different machine, or we're going to do a combination. We're going to find out what our citizens want. And I think that flat footedness, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, to where our state and county were caught off guard. You know, the contract was canceled, and boom. And that led to a recall. It led to all kinds of rules that were from the Secretary of State at July 3rd, and all that stuff, I think, could have been prevented. If in hindsight, it's a great thing if we could have done it a little differently. But restoring confidence to the voter is the main thing.
Having
election integrity. Yep. I'm all for that 100%.
Okay. So with that, Doc, we have a minute, and repeat your website again, please, and your phone number.
Okay, it's Elect Dan Sloan. You can email me at dan@electdansloan.com, And my phone number is 530-605-7459.
Well, thank you, Dr. Sloan. And, you know, hey, that's what it's all about. We need people to run for office. And when they put their hat in the ring, they, you know. So thank you for doing that, my friend.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Time has come.
For 51.
Katie, let's get it done.
Amen.
50.